You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere. Here are your hosts, Richard Justice and Allison Footer.
This is MLB.com Extras, the San Francisco Giants. I'm Richard Justice of MLB.com, joined by my colleague, Allison Footer. The San Francisco Giants have been, their 9.5 game lead in the NL West is gone, and they've lost. Brandon Belt to the DL again, the seven-day DL. Matt Cain's elbow is an issue. And yet the Giants are fighting the Dodgers for first place. Timmy Lincecum has had the bounce-back year. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, Allison. When your team goes out and gets a veteran like Danny Uggla, who's really struggled for 3 years in Atlanta, you think, well, I don't know what to make of this team. But I like them. I think you and I agree. I love the environment at AT&T Park. I love their manager. They have a lot going for them. What do you make of the Giants?
Well, I think that they're just a really good team. I don't think that they're a great team. They're playing like an unbeatable team for a pretty long period of time, and so that gave them a little bit of a cushion and some wiggle room to be not very good at other times. And so we saw a massive slide, which is very, very surprising. But Matt Cain, on the disabled list, I mean, that's nothing small, and they don't think he's returning anytime soon. They've got their issues, but like we talked about, it's a team that's very unified, and they love playing in San Francisco. The fan base is amazing, and I think that does help them a lot. And I don't think you should ever count them out because they always figure out a way, and they've certainly done it a lot this year.
Yeah, and even going to the end of the postseason, they're going to throw Cain, Bumgarner, Hudson, Sandoval has a history of doing it in October. I mean, who knows? They're going to put Uggla in that environment. He may rediscover himself because he's a workaholic, a guy that, maybe will thrive on the environment. Maybe he'll love AT&T Park, so it'll be interesting to watch.
Okay, let's bring in the Giants reporter for MLB.com, Chris Haft. Chris, thanks for joining us. With the trade deadline coming up, let's talk a little bit about, I guess, the starting rotation. I guess that's where the Giants have a need, and you see some pretty significant names being bandied about, like Bartolo Colon, Jake Peavy, where David Price, even Cliff Lee. Where do the Giants stand on that? Do they feel like there might be a match somewhere? Do you think that they will trade for a starting pitcher?
I think there's a fair chance, Allison. It's kind of ironic to be talking about starting pitching in connection with the Giants because, as everybody knows, they've had such a solid rotation. But that injury to Matt Cain, of course, has them really worried. Ryan Vogelsong has been a little inconsistent there at the four or five spots. So when you have two spots in rotation that need shoring up, that's quite a few, obviously. So yes, they'll be looking for reinforcements, and they don't have any major league ready prospects, but they have some prospects. Pitching prospects they can give up. So most notably their top pitching prospect, Kyle Crick, has been mentioned in a lot of trade speculation. So it's possible they'll go that route.
So the I know that Bruce Bochy loves Jake Peavy, but there may not be a match there just because Boston is kind of looking for, I guess, outfield prospects, and the Giants really don't have a big abundance of them. So do you see maybe going for a Bartolo Colon? I mean, I guess that's the name that I sort of see tied to the Giants more than anybody. And I don't know, you kind of wonder. I mean, I know that he is a commodity, but I also think, really? Bartolo Colon?
Yeah.
But it seems like they might be interested in him. Do you think that could come to fruition?
I think there's some interest. I think the fans and people out there are, recognize what the drawbacks might be in getting him. But he's a guy who's pitched well against the Giants before, and I think that may have made an impression on this club. I think, just for a stopgap measure, just the last couple months of the season, I could see it happening. I personally wouldn't make the move, but, again, knowing how Brian Sabian operates, he likes experienced players, experienced pitchers. I could see him doing something like that.
So with Matt Cain, it does seem to be a little bit alarming. They just don't know when he's going to be back. Do you think that even they're now talking like they just really have no idea at all when he may pitch again. So that's a huge, huge blow. Do you see him being able to maybe be ready by the time the season ends and the playoffs get going, or could this linger even longer?
That's an excellent question.
which we don't have an answer to.
Even they don't know right now. They don't even know when he's going to pick up a ball again. They may have some idea that the team will have a week-long homestand. Maybe at some point during that period they'll know. They may get the outline, the barest hints of an outline of a timetable. I know that's a lot of qualifiers right there. But, it is a great unknown. He has thrown a lot of pitches since he broke into the major leagues in late August 2005. I looked it up. I think he's thrown the fourth most pitches of anybody. And, the other three pitchers ahead of him, Dan Heron and Justin Verlander, and frankly, I forget the other one, but, they've all started to erode a little bit. And that may be what's happening with Matt here. Can he pitch well again? I'm sure. But he's going to have to make some adjustments even when he does come back.
I know that there's a lot of pride that goes along with an organization when they groom their own players. When they scout and they draft them, they develop them, and they see them come to the big leagues. And the Giants have been really good at that. And been reading some things about how there was an entirely a full homegrown infield recently fielded by the Giants for one of their games. So that's got to bode well for the way that the future looks. I mean, the Giants have always had, just a very harmonious operation there. They know how to develop their own players. They know how to get them from the outside. And obviously, they've had quite a bit of success lately. When you look at the organization as a whole, do you see that as a strength moving forward, as just their organizational talent?
Yeah, for a while there, it wasn't that way. They, their strategy was, let's build around Barry Bonds as best as we can, and that was that. But lately, they have, in the last, 7 to 8 years, they've revived the farm system, renewed their dedication to scouting and player development. And we've seen the results.
It's funny because, it's the only thing that will work. It even has to happen with some of these, hugely highly high payrolls, like the Yankees. I know Brian Cashman used to bristle at the idea, he doesn't really need to do anything because he could just go buy whoever he wants. But they actually had a very good farm system that produced a lot of their core talent that kind of got brushed aside. And it seems like no matter what organizations try to do over the years and no matter how clever they try to get, it always comes down to developing your own players and having a strong farm system and being able to bring them out to the big leagues. It's really the only thing that ultimately works.
Sure, because then you also, as Brian Sabian has done, Brian Cashman too, you use some of these prospects to trade, and you can deal from a position of strength. You're not only, developing this talent for yourself, but you are in a sense, because you're eventually going to strengthen your club, whether these players do it directly for you or, you obtain somebody else, use your talent to obtain somebody else who can help you.
Right. It's all about depth. And I always tell fans here in Houston, when they say, wait, how are they getting this guy when they already have this guy? I'm like, well, when you have one player that can actually play the position at the major league level, you lose 100 games every year. When you have too many guys, then that's when, you got something cooking. So let's end this on a little bit of a lighter note with Hunter Pence and the Philly Fanatics seem to have a little bit of a bromance going, I would think. There was some mouth-to-snout resuscitation going on. Did you happen to see any of that? And was that planned ahead of time, or was that some sort of a spontaneous thing?
Oh, it was so funny. He's just, Hunter, he's a free spirit. He does whatever moves him. as a former Philly, I think he had a little bit of a kinship or affection for the Fanatic. And, Allison, I know you know Hunter well, and he's liable to do anything out there.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. I mean, the Philly Fanatic is the greatest mascot in the history of mascots. And I genuinely laugh when I watch him. I mean, this isn't just a chuckle. When I'm actually watching a Philly Fanatic, he is hysterically funny, and it's always fun, I guess, when the players and the umpires get involved. It's just part of the shtick of baseball, I guess.
Exactly.
Okay, Chris, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate that, and good luck covering this team the rest of the year.